Hello, everybody, and welcome to Voxel Viewpoints. Today we've got a jam-packed episode. We're going to talk about Crackdown 3, specifically. We're going to talk about Anthem, and then we're going to talk about Metro Exodus. On the cast today, you have me, Ryan Shepherd, and we have Derek Trumbauer.
How's everybody doing?
And Lee Redding.
Hi, guys.
So, we are recording right now on my fancy new computer that I put together over the weekend. I decided to jump in and get one of those RTX 2080 cards. Way too expensive, way too much money, but that's the only way that I can do things. You know, you get that feeling of like if you buy the lesser one, you're like, what am I missing out on? And it's kind of like it's a sickness. It really is. It's terrible.
Yep.
And the reason why I got it is because I wanted to consolidate my setup. I had two computers. I had a streaming one that was a server as well, like a file server. And I had a dedicated gaming computer. And, you know, it was working okay. But then when it comes around time to upgrade stuff, you kind of have to upgrade two things at once. And that's not very cost effective. So I got the card, and I heard the new RTX cards are pretty good at streaming and playing games at the same time. They've got a dedicated renderer, a video renderer in there, and it works pretty well. It's about, as far as quality goes, it's about on par with what I was doing before with my CPU, but the performance increase is pretty substantial. It barely touches the performance, actually, of the whole computer. So it's working out pretty well so far. I did some testing, did some benchmarking, and I was very happy with the results.
It's very nice. It's always nice to be able to get everything in the one and then it, like, work right. Because, you know, I went through that whole snafu as well.
Yeah, you were having issues with your games crashing pretty frequently, right?
Yeah, which I think I found out more of it was the AVG antivirus, because I still use a two-computer setup. Mm-hmm. But, like, gaming and streaming is all done on one. The other one's just kind of there for having stream open, having Facebook open,
right?
You know, file server, that type of deal. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't crashed once since then. So I just think games were a little bit too much up for it because it was a little bit older, and then trying to do everything on one on it just wasn't happening.
Yeah, that was the reason why I had two. I mean, when you stream, I mean, I use OBS. I know you use XSplit, so I don't know what the hardware hit is on with XSplit, but with OBS, when I streamed, it was pretty much using 100% of my CPU, and so that left zero for the game, and you know, it would be I never had any crashes or anything when I tried it out, but it was definitely a performance issue, like low frame rates and stuff like that. But with this, it barely touches the CPU now. And it really hardly touches the GPU either. Like I can see it rendering like in Task Manager and stuff like that, but it really doesn't affect like the performance of the graphics card at all.
It's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. So I take it, Lee, now you're going to get one as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Just after I kind of... So you see, you're talking about all this sort of this RTX and this and that. I've just bought a Scarlet for my Sega Genesis. So That's probably the level we're both on.
Okay, yeah, that's about the same thing.
Yeah. That's,
yeah, the fidelity is just about the same increase.
It's stunning. It's like you got conjunctivitis. It's great.
All right, can you see every pixel?
Yeah. Sort of.
Okay.
Yeah. It looks like one big, massive, blurry pixel. It's fantastic.
Okay. Just one big blue pixel moving across the screen.
We've come a long way. We've come a long way.
Yeah, we certainly have.
I don't think TVs have SCART connectors now, do they?
No, I don't think so.
They've stopped using them.
Yeah, you need some special stuff for that. Did TVs actually ever come with them on it, or was it always something like special hardware?
In what respect?
Did they always have a SCART input? Like, was there a
time
where
No. Obviously, it was originally just a coaxial or an aerial in.
Yeah.
And then they moved up to the dual
RCA.
Audio video thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like RCA connectors. And composite.
Yeah. So we're out after that. Yeah. That's the level I'm on with tech, with computing tech.
RCA cables.
If I can plug it into the TV, I'm fine.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Well, HDMI really unified that. One cable, just plug it in, and you're good to go.
What we're saying is, I'm a Luddite. I'm a computer Luddite. I'm still playing SNES.
Okay. Well, a lot of people are playing SNES. all right. So, Crackdown 3, speaking of old games, Crackdown came out. That one that was announced, 5 years ago? Six.
Right. Did it keep getting announced and then canceled and then announced?
I don't think it was ever canceled. Well, at least officially canceled. I think it was just announced and then they didn't talk about it and then they talked about it again and then it went dead for a while and then it came back and it's out. Crackdown 3 on the Xbox One and in the personal computer. So Lee and I have played a bit of it. I think he's probably played more than me, but you probably get an idea of what that game is by playing, just a couple hours of it. I don't think it doesn't change dramatically throughout the course of it. You obviously get new abilities and stuff. It's kind of like, I guess you kind of call it like a little bit of an RPG where you're upgrading based on what you do. Skills for kills, as it were. So that this has been a long time coming. This is the follow-up to Crackdown 2, I guess, even though from what I understand, it leans more into the things that people liked about Crackdown 1. And in a lot of ways, for me anyway, it was a little bit refreshing to have a game like this that's just kind of like silly, off-the-wall craziness in a world of, I guess we're going to talk about Metro in a little while. Complete juxtaposition to like serious, slow-moving open-world games like Red Dead from last year or something like that. This is just throw you in a city and have some crazy fun.
It's a strange thing. It's almost like it's a game from last generation in the respect of kind of this generation. I think we focus, if you're looking at it, because it's predominantly a single player experience, but it doesn't really follow the mode of what you expect from a single player. It's very much a jokey Saints Row-y maybe type.
Yeah, definitely feels a little bit like Saints Row.
It's possibly got that essence of fun knockabout, but is not generally popular this generation, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's not
like
deep. It's not meant to be deep. It's kind of
I feel like we had Agents of Mayhem that didn't quite hit. That was supposed to be in that wheelhouse, and it I didn't play any of that game because the reception on that was not very good, but that was supposed to be in the vein of like Saints Row and stuff like that too. For me, the closest equivalent that I found when I was playing it was Sunset Overdrive. The kind of silly humor and everything like that, like not taking itself too seriously, but also just the like craziness of running around and the traversal abilities and, you know, not really having to, it's not really a shooter. It's, you know, everything's locked on. So you lock on and you pull the trigger, and in the bullets, like, pretty much automatically go to the enemy. There's no, like, you don't have to worry about, like, you know, weapon range or, well, I guess some of the weapons have ranges, but you know what I mean. It's like, it's very simple and it's shooting, and you're more focused on trying to avoid the damage and jump around and cause as much mayhem as possible. And that just reminded me a lot of Sunset Overdrive, because that was like that too. You weren't focusing primarily on aiming at your enemies. You were focusing more on, you know, grinding and the traversal stuff.
So it was almost as much of a Tony Hawk as it is a shooter, as it's a Ratchet and Clank.
Sunset Overdrive was, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was funny, when I was playing Crackdown 3, I kept wanting to grind. Like, I kept wanting to jump and press a button and grind. Like, I wish that was an ability you could unlock farther on down the road, down the line, because that's what I wanted to do. Yeah, and I think the game feels good to play. Like, they nailed what they needed to in terms of that. Like, it's very responsive. I never had any, you know, performance issues. I was playing on an Xbox One X. Even when there was, like, crazy explosions going off and, you know, tons of things blown up, I never felt like it was slowing down. It just was like, it was keeping up pretty steady with what I was doing. And that's really all, you know, you can ask from that in that respect. Is that the experience you had too, Lee?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. It's easy to say it controls, I mean, like an older game, I guess. It's part of the way it's built. It's part of the way, you know, it's with the, like you say, the targeting system. It may be seen as an old fashioned type system, the lock-on system, like a PS1 or a PS2 style gameplay aesthetic. But I think it does work for this without being a throwback, I guess. And it keeps the flow of it nice. The lock-on thing, it doesn't seize everything up. If you get what I mean? Do you see what I mean? The way it's built helps it bop along quite nicely. It's probably it has an aesthetic to it that is looks very old. But obviously there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of physics and there's a lot of this and that and the other that kind of doesn't slow it down like you think it would, I guess. There's a lot of stuff going on, especially when you get into... How far are you in?
I don't know. I just took down the first bad guy, the computer that was controlling the train station.
The smiling face. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been just kind of screwing around, jumping around, because I love getting the orbs. That's like I was saying in the chat. If there was a game that was just jump around this giant world trying to get all these orbs, I'd buy that game in a second. You know, I remember doing that in the previous games, and you know, it's here in very much just as fun as I remember doing it back then. I mean, there's definitely some platforming in this game that is not great, like climbing those towers. Some of that gets extremely tedious. But they do a interesting way of checkpointing. Like if you get part way up, they mark checkpoints. So like if you get, you know, a third of the way up and you miss a jump and you fall down, you can checkpoint right to where you were previously during the jumping, which is, you know, not something I would expect in a game like this, because it's, you know, open world. So you'd expect it more in like a linear platformer or something like that. But so yeah. I thought that was a nice touch to make it a little less frustrating. But I still yeah. didn't particularly enjoy those moments. Ooh. And yeah, it's certainly a little repetitive. The tasks you do, they have you do to kind of like take control of the city. You know, there's like plant, like chemical plants you have to sabotage, and it's all pretty much the same. You throw some rocks into these drills, and then eventually you have to blow up this valve. But it's all, you know, in service of what the game is trying to do, which is just throw a bunch of bad guys at you and let you shoot them. There's really not...
It's a very generous game in that respect. It's kind of, it just wants you to do what you want to do. If you play it in a certain way, you can probably max everything out about a third into the game. And yeah, doesn't punish you for doing that. In a weird way, it's a little bit like... I've seen this set before and people go a bit mad about it, but it's a little bit like Zelda, Breath of the Wild, in the case that if you want to, in 10 minutes, you can go and you can go to the end of the game. And you could probably beat the last boss. And
yeah,
that would be it. Kind of that thing. You just go straight to Ganon, and then you could technically complete it if you want to. But not the point. They want you to go around and they want you to have this sandbox, this massive sandbox. So it's very similar sort of setup in that respect.
The way that it was set up for me was like you had to you had to do these certain things in order to unlock access to the bad guys, the bosses basically.
Is but it they're possible? There if you don't like signal them, they're still there.
Oh, you can just go like the AI, you could go there and do that quest without doing all the other things. Oh, okay.
It just won't give you the nod, the checkpoint. It won't tell you on the map that it's there. It won't notify you kind of as a go and get this bad guy. He's always there.
But they're there.
You could just walk in there. You'll probably get absolutely massacred. Yeah. But he'll always be there. You can literally walk into it without having the story trigger where he is.
Okay. I guess it's a little different because Ganon was like literally marked on your map. But so you would have to do that on a second playthrough and crackdown. Like now that you know where they are, then you can go there immediately. I don't know why you would do that because you don't really get any benefit necessarily from that. It's kind of like it's a very open world. It doesn't put up barriers. Isn't like you're constricted in one district until you reach a certain milestone or something like that. You like Lee said, you can go from pretty much start to finish without any barriers, except for like, you know, if you wanted to jump somewhere high and you need to, you know, find the orbs in order to accomplish that. Because you get the orbs and they allow you to do better things while jumping, like jump higher, air dashes, and stuff like that, which is another reason why I was getting Sunset Overdrive vibes, because there's dashing in that too. Like, it's all about trying to stay above the street level. And you know, I was getting that feeling from this too. And like I said, I just wish there was some you could grind or something. It'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
What do you think of the weapons? Do you think I've found there to be a pretty good variety of weapons?
They get really interesting later. They start off the way you imagine them to, which is kind of your machine guns, your heavy artillery. Mm-hmm. Then you start getting into stuff like elemental weapons. I don't know if you got to that part yet, where you got like acid weapons.
Yeah, that
and that's interesting.
That acid thrower was pretty cool.
Yeah, you'll get an actual kind of acid launcher, and it will lock on like a sticky bomb.
Oh, okay.
And then they'll run around like a lunatic, and it'll explode over a load of people. That gets interesting.
But yeah, that sounds
when
pretty
you
cool.
go even further, you start getting stuff like portal weapons, so you can fire portals, and that's when you start seeing the engine that looks fairly basic go nuts. So it will suck everything that's in the area into a big ball and then explode everything and stuff like that. And that's when the physics of the system start looking really interesting. You've got like arc. I'm not sure what they're called, but yeah. So anyway, you've got like either portal grenades or portal.
Yeah, like a gravity bomb or something, or like a black hole kind of bomb.
Yeah, it's, yeah, basically a black hole gun.
Okay, let's suck.
That's when it really gets fun.
All right, yeah, I have not gotten to that yet, but I look forward to that because that sounds really cool.
It's probably one of the top tiers, but if you kind of know, again, if you know the right areas to pick them up,
yeah,
you will still find those. You could get that within 10 minutes if you want to. You'll probably get massacred with it, but it's there.
Yeah. I found most of the weapons to be pretty cool. Like I said, that acid thrower gun was cool. I enjoyed using that. And what was it? Oh, I use the arc rifle a lot because that good long range weapon, and it's taken pretty much everything out with one shot at this point. And I just find the variety to be like you said, Lee, taking advantage of the game systems and stuff like that in a pretty cool way. There was something else. The look of the game, which is getting kind of dragged a little bit, but when I look at that game, I see a pretty cool like cyberpunk aesthetic. Like the neon signs and everything kind of like lab clean, you know, like a doctor's office, kind of like everything looks like it's been spit shined, which means there isn't a ton of like texture detail, but like deliberately though, because there are spots where there are some textures and stuff like that, but a lot of it is very clean, very like sharp edges and stuff like that. And especially at night, that city looks fucking awesome with when the neon lights come on and the big buildings have all their lights on and stuff like that. And then, you know, combine that with the, you know, constant explosions and gunfire and missiles going off and stuff like that. And I think the game looks pretty good as and you know, it's probably it isn't like the most detailed game, but it's kind of in that, it's kind of doing that in order to make sure that it can keep up with the speed and the craziness that goes on with it, I imagine.
But it's always had that cel-shaded kind of jet set radio style look to it. That is part of the effort. It's not kind of a failure for still using that thing. It's not, you know, yes, it's probably not what people want to see in 2019. They probably want more realism for it, more kind of ultra realism, maybe make it look a little bit more like a cyberpunk, which is grittier, but it's not designed like that. It's just, that's not their intention. And so to attack it for some, because it is getting a lot of flack for a lot of different things. I don't think some of it's justified. Not a lot of it is, I don't think. You can't really have a pop something for specifically going in with the aesthetic, because it does look better than the first one. It looks better than the second one. But it's not a massive shift to the left or right. But that's the way the style is. If you're going to do a shell-shaded style, you can't really deviate much from that. That's part of the charm of the series in general, I think.
Yeah. It's the look of the game. Like, no one's going to complain about Borderlands being cel-shaded when Borderlands 3 gets announced, then it's got big, thick lines around the characters, which I'm assuming it's going to be the same art style.
They showed the demo of the new system, and it's just a cleaner look of the old system. So
it's the equivalent at the moment of people trying to compare Borderlands to Metro, which we're going to say later. It's not meant to look like a Metro. Right. Borderlands isn't meant to look like that. What's it called? Crackdown isn't meant to look like Infamous. It's not the same sort of thing. They're similar games. They're generally similar games, but they're not. They're going for a different aesthetic.
Right.
So yeah, and it's quite myopic to have a pop here for that.
Yeah, I was never disappointed with the way it looked. Even with the pre-release stuff, I was like, yeah, that looks like what I would expect Crackdown to look like. And Terry Crews looks like Terry Crews.
It certainly does.
For the few moments that he is actually in the game. Yeah, and I didn't play the multiplayer, but Lisa, you said you did, Lee, and it's nothing special, right?
No. Well, it's the antithesis of multiplayer. To have that sort of targeting system.
Yeah.
And then adapt it to something like that kind of... Because you've always had co-op in Crackdown. You've always had that two-player co-op. The two-player co-op,
by the way, is quite good.
If you have a bash at that, the two-player co-op in the campaign is pretty good. But it's when you got a lock on it in a generally kind of deathmatchy type thing, it's a bit of a mess.
Yeah, just like after I played some of the single player game and I was thinking about the way that this would work in multiplayer, I was like, bleh. This is it doesn't really sound like it doesn't really seem like it would work out very well. Unless they totally changed it. Like they took the lockout out and you had to do manual aiming or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, the much kind of flaunted cloud destruction thing is more funny than you expect it to be, because once you view it through the prism of what it is, which is VR, it's not meant to have... People are complaining that the destruction doesn't have weight, but it wouldn't have weight because it's VR. And it is cool to kind of have that destruction thing going off. That's cool to see in its kind of fractured Tron type the thing where it's just... kind of crumbling almost unrealistically. It's definitely meant to look like that. It's definitely not what we saw when we saw, I think it was 2016, and literally buildings toppling sideways and stuff like that.
Yeah, like buildings breaking into a billion little shards and stuff like that, which honestly at the time, that didn't look realistic either. Like it looked like they were like made of ice and then you smash it with something and they just smash into a bunch of little shards.
And that goes into another thing as well, which people are saying they took a lot, obviously what they saw in there, that was supposed to be implemented into the single player as well. That destruction, the crumbling cities, and you could blow everything down.
No, that was never supposed to be in the single player. That was never supposed to be in a single player.
Yeah. It was meant to be a...
No.
I'm sorry?
No, they made it clear that the building destruction was only in the multiplayer.
Did they?
Yeah, that was all part of that announcement. It was like that was only supposed to be part of, because that's the only way that the cloud would work, is because you'd be connected online and you'd be connected to a server. So if you were
the co-op section of it, yeah, because the co-op there was meant to have the co-op thing and you could destruct around the co-op.
No. No, just the competitive multiplayer.
Yeah. No, but it wouldn't have worked anyway, because then you just collapse the buildings you want the orbs on.
Well, yeah. That's why they would have never put that in there, is because you would the whole up so much of the game is based around having all the buildings in place and being able to jump on them and, you know, like you said, getting the orbs or like, you know, climbing a tower to get to a boss or something like that. Like, if you could just go and blow it up, then that wouldn't be...
What's the point?
Yeah, that would be counterproductive to the whole flow of the game.
I mean, obviously they're going to treat this the way they do with maybe Sea of Thieves and stuff like that, when they keep adding content. I would assume they're going to add more to the multiplayer.
Maybe, I don't know.
They're two separate developers, I believe, doing it. Sumo did the single player. I don't know who did the multiplayer. I think it's a newer company. But
yeah,
I'm assuming they'll add more to both.
I don't know if they've announced anything like that yet. I guess we'll see if it's worth it for them to do that. It was worth it for them for Sea of Thieves, because that's like all multiplayer, you know, so they want to get people into it. All right, so before we move on, Derek, do you have anything you want to ask us about Crackdown?
I guess the only thing I was going to ask was, how's the flow of all the different mechanics? Like, how well does everything come together as a whole? Like, if you want to, like, jump around and traverse, like you're saying, but then all of a sudden you're going to lock on and shoot or use a skill.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about with the lock on, why that works, is because you're locking on, you don't have to worry about aiming. So then you can jump up, you can double jump, you can dash to the left, dash to the right in midair to avoid shots and stuff like that. And I think it works. I wish it was a little bit more. Like, I think it worked. Like, I was keep going back to, I think it felt and worked better in Sunset Overdrive because you had the grinding. And once you were up in the air, it was easier for you to stay up in the air and avoid all of the enemies and stuff like that. Here, you know, you can only stay up in the air for so long before you fall back down. And sometimes it's difficult to dodge everything because there's so much going on, but it is possible to dodge, like, when enemies have rockets and more slower, more powerful weapons, you can do that. And yeah, I think it comes together pretty well. There isn't like a huge laundry list of skills and stuff like that. Like right. abilities and things like that you're firing off and you get along the way. You kind of like, it's kind of like boiled down to, you know, your shooting will get better, your guns will get better, you'll get stronger, you'll be able to jump and dash more and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember that from like the first one. You'd start, by the end, you'd have like super strength, you'd jump so high and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you can pick things up and throw things, like cars and stuff like that. And there are some abilities, like I unlocked a ground slam. When you're in the air, you can hold I forget which button it is, but you can just smash down into the ground, and it kind of does like an area of effect damage to hit a group of enemies, and then you can, you know, work that into taking them out with whatever gun you have.
The one thing they did add was, because obviously you just got more powerful and you could jump higher, just higher and higher and higher and longer with the original ones. With this one, you got a double jump you can do, but you've also got a dash, a mid-air dash, so you could have got dash forwards and sideways, but you can double that, so you can do double, triple jumps, and then you can do double, triple dashes. So that does open up the combat a lot more. You can avoid, once you really get into it, I've got a triple dash and a double jump. So you can really dance around them, and kind of that's when it really gets impressive.
Yeah,
because later on, the forces start to really attack you, and then you get a lot of people. You're not just getting the bases you have to attack, and you get a dribble of people, and then you'll fight about 10 or 15 people, and then it's done. After that, once you cause too much ruckus, everybody descends upon you, and it just into absolute chaos.
Yeah,
like the air force starts coming in, and when you're doing that, and you've got the double, triple, zap, and stuff. It does open it up a lot more than it did in the first one. It's a lot more dynamic with the combat, I think.
Okay.
So you must only have opened a couple of the dashes up by now, I would have thought. Probably got one or two dashes?
I've got two, and I've got the jumping. I think I got triple jump. So, yeah. So I think I'm like level 5 or 6.
It does open it up a lot more, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Mm. And I was just going to add that the environments that you're fighting in, like the game kind of like tells you go here and accomplish this task, and that kind of that the enemies are going to attack you in that area, and they're designed to have like there's a lot of verticality to it. So like you'll jump up and you'll get on a catwalk, and then you'll start taking guys out from down below, but then guys will start coming up on that catwalk, so then you can jump off, dash over to another one, and, you know, get behind a guy with a shield or something like that. And, you know, that's when, like, that those dashes and those jumps and everything start to open up.
It's one of those systems that it's difficult to explain. It's one of those things you have to actually hold.
You have to hold and
because I can tell you it's a good double, triple, zip thing, but if you're actually holding it, it's very hard to explain it. You have to experience it to feel the flow.
Yeah. It's definitely, once you get your hands on it and you play it, then it's like, oh, okay, this all makes sense, and it all comes together pretty well.
That's good.
Yeah. So, with that being said, let's move on to Anthem, which, ironically enough, this is...
Look at his little face!
What?
There, his little face is glowing.
It is. Which ironically is another game with lock-on aiming.
Yeah. So
is that where you want to start?
Yeah, we'll just dive into it, because of course, as everybody's seen and heard, there's been good things said about it, bad things said about it, more bad things said about it, and then just more piled on top of there. Because it's like, I'm going to say, I completely enjoyed it and I played it. A lot of people that are playing it when it works enjoy it, but it does have its problems. It is also a live service game. So one of the notes like I was making earlier is how fast they're working on stuff and trying to get fixes out and listening to what the community wants and then implementing the best they can. Because, we can ask for all these things, but in the long run, we don't know how their system is designed to handle what we want it to do versus what they're able to make it do for us. So I completed it today. I've been playing pretty much nonstop since Friday morning, 12, when it launched live. Hit level 30, cleared out the story. I've heard some people have cleared out story around level 16 or so because they've been rushed through by somebody. I did a lot of going back and helping people, because at different times, different people would be on, so I've gone through like the first half of the story about 5 or 6 times so far. And for me, that's been fun, because I always pick up something new, or you're not always going through the same exact way for the missions, because there's like slight deviations and paths you can go. And then as you like unlock more story quests, like more collectibles become available to find new ways to find them because of something you've learned in a mission. So it's been an interesting ride through. As far as story goes, I'd put it on par that was about a little shorter to like a mid-range story. I'd put it kind of close to Destiny 2's campaign in length. There's a lot of interactions that open up within the Fort Taurus area. Not so much when you're like out in the open world, but when you're back in the fort, they have different people you can talk to at different times. You can talk to them, and they have a lot of like variations of what they say. I don't think I really ran into the same conversation twice. And then,
My experience with it, I played a little bit of it, the final release last night, didn't get too far into it, but it turns out that beginning part of it was the alpha they had earlier in the year, so I played that up until you first get to the Fort Tarsus. I had known about like the opening to that game, basically. Where your squad gets wiped out, and then it's like 3 years later or something like that, and you're trying to rebuild the reputation of the freelancers, as it were. And for me, and of course I played the open beta with you and a little bit myself as well. That was like, from what I understand, that open beta was kind of pretty far into the game.
They had said that it was about midway through. It's closer to late, like that set of missions.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
To the end of the game than you would think.
Yeah. So me coming into it, I played a lot of Destiny. I played Destiny from the beginning. And obviously the comparisons to Destiny are going to happen. And right off the bat, what I was hoping from Anthem was, what BioWare brings to games, which is like a good story. you know, Mass Effect and Dragon Age and all that stuff. You know, some of the best stories in video games. Mass Effect is, you know, the universe building and characters and stuff like that. You know, that's like, that shit's on par with, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek in terms of like sci-fi story and stuff like that. And at least from the alpha and the beta, I felt like a lot of the characters, especially when you were walking around, like there wasn't much going on in the fort. Like there are people. There's just people there. Like they look like they're going about their lives, but they're not walking around. They're not moving. They're kind of like just standing still.
They're more like stationary. And
yeah, like it reminded me of Borderlands 2, where you'd walk around the city areas and everybody would just be like, the guy would always be leaning up against the building and he'd always be there. And you know, then you'd go up to a character in Anthem, you'd go up to a character that you're supposed to talk to and you'd activate the dialogue, and then it would be kind of like this weird stage play where they're acting directly to you, like they're very much in your face with all of the way that they're acting and stuff like that, because the fort area is first person and the combat is third person, which is a juxtaposition there as well, where you're walking around the non-combat area in first person, and then when you're fighting, you're in third person. So they're like right up in your face and like talking directly to you and stuff like that, which I found a little strange. What's your take on the way that they tell like that, the way that they do that? How did you, after playing it for as much as you did?
It wasn't like at first, it wasn't like what I was expecting out of it. To have it like just like that, like I thought there was going to be more people like moving around, especially from early videos that they showed like coming into the fort area, and there was like people walking around and stuff like that. In the game, you don't have that. But on the upside, the interactions with the characters and talking to them have been very colorful. Like some, like I've come to a point where I really like this character and I really hate this guy. And there's some like you said, a lot of them are stationary. Like in games like Borderlands, you'll find the same people in the same spots. Every now and then, they'll kind of move around. Or like one character I talked to, and she had a quest, and then we went over to her apartment, which opened up kind of another area of a fort that I wasn't able to get to yet. So that was kind of cool and refreshing. But the fort itself felt kind of small and confined. It wasn't as big as I imagined it would have been, since they said a lot of like storytelling and stuff would be taking place here. That was the big single player aspect of the game.
Yeah, you'd think that would be like the big city, you know?
Yeah.
And like, you know, the Citadel in Mass Effect or you know, some of the bigger cities in Dragon Age. And like the entirety of Dragon Age 2 took place in a city, right?
Yeah.
I never played that one, but that's what I heard.
Yeah, most of it was, I think there was a couple like small like side dungeon and areas you could get to, but the most of it was like this huge, huge city.
Right.
So it was kind of a little different approach coming from what you would expect from that studio.
Yeah.
Did it hinder the experience at all? A little bit, but there's still stuff that's happened there. I was like, these conversations were great, where like, I can't wait till I talk to this character again to see what they say. Because, you know, there would be some goofy stuff. There would be some serious conversations. I think it was just enough. It'll be interesting to see how they can build on it.
Yeah, do you think the story overall was satisfying? Like, without obviously spoiling too much of it, but do you think it told a good story?
I think it did. I think it gave a good grounds to what could be an overarching, like, the entire arc is going to be a very good story. Yet, not all of it has been told yet. This was kind of like, if you think of the book, this kind of felt like this is chapter one of it.
Okay.
And then now,
it ended, so we're going to see where they're going to bring it into the next spot of what happens.
Okay. And you think there's enough to keep that interesting?
Yeah. Without spoiling anything, I'm going to say yeah, because you complete the game, it rolls credits, you come back in. After I had that crash, when you're like, good. We've got something to show you, my game crashed on me, which was the first crash I've had. On top of everybody's, like, hundreds of crashes.
Yeah, there's some other stories out there.
Yeah, what they showed after that, I was just like, no, now I have to wait.
Yeah, well, you don't have to wait too long. There's another thing coming out in March, right?
Yeah, I have the roadmap up here for March. This one doesn't have the dates on it, but they do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like 8 big chunks of stuff that they want to add in. And from my understanding is each month they're going to add in this stuff. And then I believe by the end of April, beginning of May, the game's going to get it. The first cataclysm's going to happen, which will be a big world-changing event. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see how well they lead up to that to keep everybody's interest.
Mm-hmm.
And then how well that event's actually pulled off. Because they tried something like that in the demos for it. And no one was really sure what was going on, if it was supposed to be this cataclysm or if it was just supposed to be this Shaper Storm. And it just felt very lackluster there. So there are parts of it that need improving. Then there's parts of it that like work good. Like when you're in there playing and you're in your javelin, it's been a blast.
Yeah, but so then, let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk a little bit about the gameplay, like what you're doing moment to moment when you're actually in the javelin and you're flying around.
Okay, so when you're in there, I'm playing the Colossus, so I'm kind of a heavy guy, so I don't get to fly as far as the lighter ones do. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of constantly like looking for water, looking for a waterfall, because if you go through a waterfall, you get like 20 or 30 seconds or so where you can just fly, and it's not affecting your overheating.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of depends like which class you have as far as like how far you can fly. Everybody can fly the same height because it kind of cuts you off. And when you're down in combat, you have like you've got a variety of like 5 or 6 different skills that you can like mix and match, and everything's picked up by a drop. So like you can't just say, okay, I want a skill point in this. I'm gonna have this here, and I'm gonna have this here, and then switch it. You actually have to have a drop of that skill to equip it.
Okay.
To use it. So like you can hold 2 guns, and then you also have your like your 2 skills, which are used for chaining and comboing, which would be kind of like your elemental damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't think any weapon has elemental damage on it.
Okay.
They use what it's called as a blast damage, and that's like how hard it hits, and then if it does anything else to help set off stuff. Because some guns you can hit, like if somebody's frozen and you hit it hard enough, it might cause it to shatter.
Okay. What do you think about how like the limitations on flying and how quickly you overheat and stuff like that? Do you think that that kind of is a, obviously it's like a balance thing, but do you think it's a little bit too restrictive? Because I've heard people complaining about that, that, you know, the flying is the thing that they showed off and it's fun, but I can't stay up for too long before I have to land and cool off.
Right. I think what they should have done with it is since free play and your missions are kind of broken apart from each other, they're separate.
Mm-hmm.
Within missions, I'd say it's fine how it is, because then, like, if you're just up flying away, you could constantly, like, hit and then, like, run away real fast and then come back and then run away real fast.
Yeah.
And then come back to fly out a danger or harm. So I think if they left, like, a nonstop flying, it would kind of break the game a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But if maybe they had an element in free play where they extended the amount of time you could fly, maybe adjustments with that would make it a little bit better.
Right, because the stakes aren't as high there, right?
Yeah, because the only time it felt really tedious is when you're actually, like, when you hop off, if you're, like,
launching from a strider or you're launching from the fort. When you have to fly to a mission that's like starts really far away, because some of them do, some of them you fly for like 5 minutes or so, then it gets tedious because you got to stop, land, then you might have to attack some things, get up, and then go again. So,
well, you're just trying to get to the mission start.
Yeah.
What do you think of? Well, so one of the things that bothered me in the beta was when one person in your squad gets to the objective or something, it automatically, well, it doesn't just automatically warp you, but it actually throws up a loading screen and then warps you to where they are. And this is something that I'm not sure about the Division, but I know it happens in Destiny when somebody gets to a certain point. If they go far ahead, it warps you. But the difference is that it doesn't load. It doesn't throw up a loading screen. It just warps you there, and you're there immediately, which can be annoying if you're out, you know, trying to do something else. But it definitely didn't strike me as jarring as it is when I started playing Anthem, when I started playing the beta. I think it was the load screen. I think it's like the whole full screen load screen that comes up.
Yeah.
What does that, like, do you get used to that, or does that stay kind of frustrating throughout?
They made it a little better, so you have a little bit more time to catch up. I guess what it is for the mission is they kind of want you staying together and not just wandering off. They kind of want you focused on that mission.
Yeah.
But it can be tedious because sometimes it'll load real fast and within like a blink you'll be up there where you need to be. Or sometimes it'll be like you're loading into a fresh game. So it'll be like the first time you're loading in and you've got that long load time. So it's been very, I couldn't give like 100% like this is my standpoint on it. It's not good, and it's not necessarily bad for where they're using it.
Okay. I think, it was kind of disorienting too. Like all of a sudden you'd be in this completely different place and you'd be like, what's going on?
Yeah, especially if you're playing with randoms, know that what I've noticed so far from just playing with randoms is know that their goal is to get to that mission and get it done.
Yeah.
They're not looking to farm anything on the way. They're not to look for chests or anything on the way. They're just to do that. So what we'll do is like when I'm playing with a group, we'll just put it on private so that we don't pick up a fourth person.
Okay.
And then as long as we're together within, and they expanded the range a little bit more, so it was actually not as bad when you're playing with a group where you can communicate, where we're going to like, okay, I'm going to look here, I'm going to check here, we're going to check here, and then we'll move on. But if you're playing with somebody that you can't communicate with, they're just going to be hauling ass to the mission, and yeah, then it's going to pull you forward, and it could get tedious depending like how close the blocks are. Because some of the missions, you get to the point and then like turn and have to go like this way a little bit, and it would warp you to this point. By the time you got there, they'd be at that next one, so it would warp you again. So
yeah.
It's kind of like a double-edged sword for how they want to use it.
How are the weapons? Do the weapons feel like, you know, they're worth getting, you know, or does it, do they feel samey throughout?
At first I was really mixed between using weapons and then using like your skills, because like the setup I have on, my skill recharges are really fast, and that's what's setting off the combos and doing your damage. But once I started getting more into it and playing and like tinkering with different weapons, because, you know, trying to up your gear score so you can get to that next tier, I started playing around with more of the weapons, and then I started liking more because I figured out how to exactly use them and then use my skills. Because like your guns, you want to use to take down the enemy shield and then use your skills, because some enemies aren't, their shields aren't affected by elemental damage at all. And that's mainly what your skills are all elemental. So once you learn how to use the two together, the gunplay becomes fun. Okay. I hated grenade launchers when I started with them. When I got my first couple, I was like, wow, this is dumb. We had one that bounced, and it was just really hard to use at first. And then I'd gotten one that was a sticky grenade that shot out pretty much. And that was a lot of fun. But then the first masterwork item I got
was a grenade launcher, but it bounced the bullets. But I was like, okay, I want to use this because that's a level 40 point versus the level 30 stuff I was getting.
Mm-hmm.
So once I actually learned how to use it, it became a lot of fun to use, and I learned when to use it, where to aim it, and that kind of thing. So kind of like with the gunplay, it kind of depends on like how much are you going to enjoy tinkering like that and finding out what you like and don't really like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to try out an assault rifle. Okay, I don't like it. I'm going to try out a sniper. Okay, I don't like that. Like, my brother loves snipers. He tried one out. Didn't like it at all.
So then he had to load back to Fort Tarsus and swap out his loadout and then load back into the mission.
He had an assault rifle with him, so, like, you kind of rely on your weapons a lot less. And it also depends on your class, too, because he was playing a Storm, so he was kind of just, like, freezing everything for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then, me and my friend's Colossus are built the same way with a flamethrower and a shock coil. So we're just down there comboing like there's no tomorrow off of everything.
Okay.
Is combat easy to follow? Because from the outside looking in, I haven't played it, I probably won't play it.
Yeah.
You've just said you've got elemental stuff and you've got weaponry.
Yeah.
Now, I watched some footage, quite a bit of footage, where everything's kicking off at once. And there's like electricity, and there's powers, and there's pulses, and there's explosions, and it looks really hard to follow. Is it easy to follow the combat? It seems very cluttered visually when all of the physics and the
especially the when you're trying to do something like set up a combo or something like that.
Yeah, it can get hard to follow at times because one of the things I wish they would adjust is your field of view, especially for the Colossus, because he takes up like a decent amount of the screen. So if we could be further back from it, I think it would make following a little bit easier. Because there's some times where there's so much stuff going off, and with a Colossus, I'm kind of up there because I also have a shield. So I've got all these explosions going on. Some of the times I can't see what I'm shooting at, and if I'm waiting on recharge, then I'm just like, okay, what's going on? So yeah, sometimes you can get lost because some of the battles you get, like, a lot of enemies are coming in, and it'll be interesting to see on the higher difficulties how well that works together versus being able to talk about what's going on. Because, you know, I'll call, like you'll start learning how enemies behave, so you can call out things for the Colossus. I can be like, all right, throw up your shield, move back some. Okay, I can take my shield and bash one and then switch to use my flamethrower. Yeah, so it's kind of like, it's a mix, and it kind of depends, like, who you're playing with and how well you know the play styles of what's going on.
This is like something that maybe they should pull back a bit on with everything at once, because it eventually becomes a detriment because you can't see what you're shooting.
Yeah. If we had a little bit more control over the field of view, I think that would help a lot in the enjoyment of combat. Like, combat's still fun. It's just there's some times where you're just so close in and there's so much going off at once.
Nate, you played on PC some. Is there a setting in there where you can make the field of view wider?
I do not believe there was. I think Ghost Systems pretty much had the same settings.
Okay. Alright. I have it on PC. Came with my fancy new graphics card, so I'm going to be playing it a little bit on there. And I'll check that out. It looks great. It's a great looking game, that's for sure. That Frostbite engine, it does one good thing, and that's make things look pretty. I really can't say that it does anything else very well, but including game development. I mean, have you noticed that since EA's like kind of forced Frostbite on everybody, that their games haven't been that great? Especially BioWare's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can notice too with like some of the characters, like how you're talking about how it was a very like the characters are in your face.
Yeah.
Some of that bothered me too because they'd just be like talking like really weird. Like the one girl, like you're talking to her, and she's going like this with her hand while talking to you, and it was just really weird.
Yeah, it was like an overacted like stage play is the best thing that I can describe the acting that I've seen so far. Is like everyone's trying to overact. It's like Johnny Depp is playing every character, and he's just like, he's just like flailing around, jumping on things, and like getting right up in your face, and all this stuff. And it's just like, it's such a strange thing. It reminds me of like, those old.
I still haven't gotten used to that either in it, and it sucks too, because like I said, the actual conversations that you're having with the people are a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, it seems like there's a lot of, like, the dialogue seems good and the voice acting seems good, and, like, the stories they're telling are at least somewhat interesting, but I'm just constantly distracted by, like, their movement and just the weirdness of the way that it's being presented. It's like those old FMV games that it was, like, a first person, like, you were an actual character in the game, and everybody was talking to you, and they were trying to immerse you in it, and like pretending like they're pulling your arm along or something like that, and that's the feeling I got from it. Or like whenever a real movie tries to do first person, and it never quite feels right. It's just strange. Like I've never really seen anything like that before, because like, and when you have a conversation in Skyrim or Fallout, you know, it just goes into that first person camera and it's just their face and you talk back and forth. I don't know, it's or even like Mass Effect and stuff like that, you know, it would be like a cinematic camera that it would go into, where it would, you know, it would go between your two characters, and then when you're out of it, it went back to the third person behind the back. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still gonna, like I said, I'm still gonna play more of it. So one of the other things that sorry. Go ahead, Lee. Sorry.
Talking about the engine, have they fixed the pop-in yet? The outrageous pop-in. Understand rocks and stuff like that and bushes popping in. I watched a bit of footage and someone was in the hub and the entire hub popped in. Is it that bad?
No.
Literally, you could just see the outside environment, and the entire hub walls popped in, and it's like
sounds like a glitch.
Yeah, I haven't had something that bad happen. There was one mission where it's happened to me both times I've been in the mission, but like half the level was just like if you put a red lens over your eye, everything was just red.
Jesus Christ!
And then there's a loading screen where they didn't quite make the loading screen wide enough so you can see the game loading behind the scenes.
Oh, nice.
So, like, if you look at the two sides, you can see the game loading. So what you're going to load into is there. But there's just, like, a sliver on each side.
Yeah,
that's like, has anybody else noticed that? Because I sure as hell see it.
Yeah, well, when I'm making a scene in OBS and I'm trying to get it just over the edge, but I miss it by like 2 pixels, and then it's the only thing you see.
Yeah, I do that. Like, I put on my overlay and I kind of had like that thin box overlay and I didn't move it, but when I went to stream, I saw it and I was like, hold on, guys. Boop. Yeah, it was just like that.
That's funny. So, one of the other things that I heard is the lack of kind of like explanation of how the combo system works in the game.
I'd say that I don't fully understand it and what's actually like. When he talked about it, I thought everything was supposed to have a symbol, like this move was your primer and this move was a detonator. When they initially talked about it like that, like it was like, whoa, this is going to be great. You're going to have this move. You're going to know this move sets up like this. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to know this move sets up like that. So when you're playing with your team, you're going to be like, all right guys, prime, my detonator is ready. Like stuff like that. But it doesn't happen. You just kind of use moves and hope they come together, that my shock coil detonates off my fire move for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just not clear on, like, what's priming for what and what you should use to detonate it and stuff like that.
Right. It's kind of filling it out and seeing what's comboing. And then, like I said, I kind of just, like, found out that this flamethrower with shock coil works really, really good.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe some a little bit more explanation on that down the line, like... making it clear on, you know, use this and combo it with this, and you'll get the best results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they could also have made it too, where like one, because you have, you know, your two sets of moves, and they're both clearly separate sets. That okay, this set of moves are your primers, this set are your detonators. That might have made it a little bit better too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just kind of making it like a, it's either one or the other kind of thing.
Yeah, because like, we'll use the Ranger for example too, is like he has two moves that are basically both grenades he shoots out.
Mm-hmm.
But like, okay, so are they going to be detonators? Are they going to be doing something? So it's just kind of, it's a bit weird system that could use some fine tuning, but okay. it's not bad, but it's not great.
All right. Is there anything else you want to add, Lee or Derek?
I don't think. Lee.
Oh, no. Oh, do you think, seeing that it was out of the oven too early as a base game, or do you think it's kind of fine? It does seem like there's a lot of things that should be there, like explanations, like, say, of certain systems and stuff, and then the technical sides.
Yeah, do you think it came in too early?
It's been rushed out, even though it's been delayed?
I don't think it's been too rushed. I just think maybe with how much they've been talking about and how much they've tried to be transparent with it, that not everything actually happened. Like I was saying, like the little symbols for priming and detonator, they're not, I don't really notice them or know if they're even there. But that was something they've talked about, if that kind of makes sense.
They took out a pilot skill tree, didn't they?
Oh yeah, but that is going to be coming back, because what happened was they had it and the system didn't work as well as they thought, and as well as they wanted it to, so they were working on fine-tuning that system, and I believe by May that system will be implemented.
Okay. So then what happens for your, you know, your level 50 character or whatever the level cap is, do you all of a sudden get access to that, or is that only something that helps out if you're starting out from like a new character?
I'm not sure, because they really haven't talked too much about it. Okay. It was one of the things that players were asking for and then that they were going to do before, and now they're just trying to find out how to implement it right and make it something that's going to be worthwhile. Could it help in the long run? I think for the longevity of the game, introducing a pilot skill system at endgame might be more beneficial than having it there all along.
Well, it sounds like that's where it was going to end up being anyway. Apparently there's some dialogue in the game that actually alludes to the fact that there used to be a skill tree in it, and that they don't have it in there anymore.
Oh.
Yeah.
But woven into the narrative.
I think it's just like a menu thing that like you're supposed to get some sort of reward at the end of completing something. I don't know the details about it. I heard somebody else talking about it. And what you end up getting is just some like upgrade materials or something like that. But the dialogue box that pops up suggests that there's a pilot like upgrade system that you just unlocked, but you didn't actually do that. Like it didn't actually happen. So it looks like they had that in and then they forgot to take the dialogue out that alluded to it. And then I looked into it more and it turns out that they had a system like that in there, but then they decided to take it out before launch. Yeah, so I guess we'll see if that comes back and if it's something that adds a little bit to the end game or how they implement it.
Right, it'll be interesting to see what they do with something like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens after The Division comes out next month, because that's definitely a competition for this type of game.
That's going to be a very big...
Destiny is kind of on a downslope in terms of content coming out, so that they don't have to worry about that one for too long. But The Division 2 is coming out mid-March, so I guess we'll see where allegiances lie.
Yeah, we'll see, because I've got that one pre-ordered already, actually.
Yeah, that's the one I'm excited for.
Is it this weekend? Yeah, this weekend is the open beta for Division 2.
Yep.
So if you didn't get to check out that closed beta, that'll be there.
Yeah, that's...
It does look surprisingly promising. I don't play live services games, but I'm interested in it.
Yeah. The first one didn't... I fell off of that one pretty quick. I just didn't think it felt that great, and the story wasn't that great. And I don't think the story is going to be very good in this one either. But it feels like just that closed beta I played felt way better than that original game. And the upgrades and stuff that looks like you can unlock look pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the fact that they've kind of broken, like with that upgrade system in the beta that we played, that they kind of broken apart the game some.
Mm-hmm.
And because now you earn like your combos that we were doing just in the regular game, you now have to unlock being able to do those. So I guess it adds this little new depth that the first one didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. Yeah. To me, it felt like a reskin of the first one. I fell off the first one real quick because it was a mess, especially with adding in new equipment, then adding in sets of equipment, and then the constant nerf between PvP and PvE just kept ruining the game for me.
Yeah.
So that's why I was kind of glad for Anthem being just straight PvE and then expanding on there.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I'm sure we'll be back next month talking about The Division the same way we're talking right now about Anthem.
The Division this morning. Yeah.
Tis the season. Yeah, all right, so that's going to wrap up our Anthem talk, and now we're moving on to Metro Exodus, which Lee and I have played. It seems like we played up till the same point. We'll try to keep the spoilers light, but we're in the second large region, the desert area, and this is something. So I was pretty excited about this game. I replayed the first two Metro games, Metro 2033 and Last Light, to kind of like refresh myself on the story and everything like that. Because that's what kind of like what this series was about, was like, it told a pretty good story while also being a video game, which is something that, games can sometimes struggle with, especially first-person shooters. And, you know, it's the story about, you know, the nuclear apocalypse, basically, and this group of, like, 100,000 people or something like that flee to the metro tunnels underneath Moscow, and that's where they survive, basically, the nuclear war. And then, like, years later, they start to kind of, like, rebuild and come back to the surface, and they find all these weird monsters, and there's these weird, like, otherworldly beings that start showing up. And the first two games are kind of about your character, Artyom, learning to figure out how he can communicate with these beings, and also him trying to navigate through the political situation going on in the metro, because it's humans, so you have factions forming, and like there's like Soviet communist factions, there's a Nazi faction, there's all sorts of different factions that kind of crop up underneath the city as they in the tunnels as they try to rebuild and stuff like that. And this one is about them leaving the tunnels. Early on, you get on a train and you start chugging out into the world, as it were. And I was looking forward to it because it sounded cool, like these smaller kind of open world environments that you can explore and do some of the survival mechanics that this series has been known for. Like, you know, you have to have a gas mask on to protect yourself from the radiation, and like you got to change filters, you got to make sure it's clean, you got to wipe it with your hand and repair it and stuff like that. And like ammo was always in short supply. And I think it nails some of that stuff, Exodus does, but I think it falls pretty short in terms of storytelling and just kind of like, I guess it's storytelling. I guess that's really where it falls apart, and all the things associated with that, like characterization and voice acting and writing in general. It seems like they had this cool idea of these open areas and mixing in the survival mechanics, and then they had to tie some story around it because it was a Metro game and that's what people are expecting. And the result is a lot of like retconning, retconning so much of what the previous stories were, like just making up weird excuses for them to be out doing what they're doing, and like character motivations are very strange, and Captain Miller's a dumbass. I don't like over and over and over again, and he was totally not that in the previous games. Like, no. You could, if you told me that these were two completely different characters, I would believe you, because the Captain Miller from the previous games is not this Captain Miller that you're seeing here, and I just don't understand where that all fell apart, and like the weird, sometimes endearing, other times just kind of strange relationship you have with your wife, where she just kind of stares at you with a dead smile, and that's pretty much it. Like, that's pretty much the entire character there. She just keeps getting trapped in caves and shit, and you have to go save her. And then she's like, oh, thank you, Artyom. I love you. And then she'll just go and get herself fucked over again. Yeah. What do you think, Lee? What's your take?
How long you got? It's the core of it, the idea that I take it away from the tunnels, which is very linear, very survival horror-y linear thing, and take it open is quite nice. Stitch it together. Not so much. It's kind of in the middle between kind of a high indie and a triple A. So it's not like got the biggest budget in the world, but it's got a sufficient enough budget. It's a relatively well made game with enough miscalculations and errors in the story to make it very, very funny. You're on the train, and I can't spoil too much, but you'll get on this train after this really bizarre long, about hour long tutorial where you get out multiple times, and do all the stupid things and get shot so many times, don't believe. But anyway, that just happens, and you get onto this train which is traveling through.
If you're picking up this game, just try to get through that tutorial. If you can get through that tutorial, it does get better. That tutorial is awful, and it's also where some of all of these like dialogue issues and story stuff really start to, like, if you can get past the tutorial and you can get past that the garbage stuff at the beginning, you can probably get past the rest of it, because the dialogue anyway.
Then you get
on
the train, and it's even worse.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you can get past that initial, oh my god, these people are dumb, and this whole story is ridiculous. If you can get past that, there is fun to be had. I don't know how much fun, so go ahead.
The train's essentially a hub, isn't it? Where you kind of have your map guidance taking you off to certain places. And within it, you get to fill out your part of the story, because obviously you don't get to go to the hub cities under the world anymore. You have to do all that in the space of two cabins on the train.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking to your people, and then you'll kind of have your little bit of dialogue telling you where you go to next. And then you say, go and talk to some people before you leave. So you do, kind of, and you go, and you think, I'll just have a quick word with him. Maybe I'll get an achievement out of this. So you go out to the front of the train and you start talking with about three or four people. Yeah. They'll have a comrade for about 2-3 minutes. Yeah. And I'm standing there and I'm kind of watching. They're boring, generally boring conversation. And I'm watching eventually the same building go past because it's like a Scooby-Doo background and you keep seeing the same building go past.
Yeah.
And I'm like, right, you should just talk and I'm going to go. And after a pause, they start talking again.
The train's stationary and they got the background going around on a track.
Yeah. And then they keep you talking. They're talking for 10 minutes and they stop. And you're like, I can go now. And then they start talking again about, I don't know.
They never...
So you've got, right, 10 minutes, I'm done. Right, let's go and talk to the train driver. And the train driver tells his quite moving story about his wife, you know, from before the war. And how she, you know, he was a sad man when he was, because he was a freight, he was a locomotive driver that went around the city. And he was sad because he didn't get to travel the land. And kind of see Russia. He was just going in a perpetual circle, and it's like, oh, I wish you could see me now because I'm traveling, you know, I'm now going forward instead of going in circles, and I'm watching the same fucking building go across in the background. Yeah. I'm like, hang on a minute, mate. What's going on there?
Yeah.
It's like the same building. It's like, at least I'm seeing the sights. I'm not going in a perpetual circle, and it's like, the same fucking building. Yeah. So there's that going on. And then you talk to Captain Miller, who's angry because you've done something that says, I should kill you for this. And then, like, he realizes it's not as bad as thought. He's like, oh, great, here, have a drink.
By the way. Over and over and over again. It's just like, I can't believe you did that,
you went off and did your own thing. You did off and did your own thing. You got us into a lot of trouble. And then you get to the land, and everybody says, should we go with him, sir? He said, no, he can go on his own. That's fine. And then send you out on your own anyway, which is the thing it was going to kill you for originally in the first place.
Yeah.
It's very, very strange. Or there will be things like inconsistency with graphics. There's a guy you're talking to. It's like, and they have this weird conversation about this guy, and he's tired. And he says, oh, I'm so tired. I'm going to go to sleep now. You carry on. And he goes to sleep, but it's like that. But it's like the facial animation's the same. So he's supposed to be sleeping in the corner snoring, but his eyes are like that. I'm like, good night, sweet prince.
Yeah,
very strange. Everything's just not quite polished enough. The dialogue is awful, quite frankly. Motivations are terrible. As I say, he doesn't let you going off doing your own thing, but then he sends you out on your own in a mission.
Yeah,
or with your wife in a mission, which is the thing he just bollocked you for.
Right, and which it's also all very which strange. Wife also happens to be his daughter.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
So there's this whole weird, like. That's your father-in-law. This Captain Miller that is just the biggest dumbass is also your father-in-law. And that was kind of a weird, that was probably the weirdest part of Metro Last Light too, was the relationship between you and who's now your wife, Anna, who starts off that game as like a hotshot sniper in the order, which is like the special forces of the Metro and stuff like that. And then it just gets even weirder, them trying to have, like, I can see them trying, like, they're trying really hard to make, like, this relationship between you and your wife meaningful, and, like, there's a scene where when you're going to the second area, the second open area, you know, you're having a conversation with her about I don't even remember what, because it doesn't friggin' matter, but she lays your head down on your lap, and you can, like, you can press a button and, like comfort her and stuff like that, but, like, it's just, like, the dialogue, the voice acting is so bad, the dialogue is really bad, and it just doesn't work at all, because it doesn't... None of it feels authentic. None of it feels real. And then that's when that moment comes up when I was mentioning before, where eventually it's like, okay, time to play the game. So you get up and she just sits there on the bed with her eyes wide open, like the characters don't blink. And she's just like staring with her half smile face, like at nothing. Like she's staring at the wall, and you can you could walk past that room like three times and the doors open and just see her sitting there staring and she's not doing anything. Like, why doesn't she get up and walk to some other part of the train? Because so like she's actually alive and doing something, but no, she just sits there and stares. And like you're supposed to go up to, you know, some of these conversations that people are having, listen to them talk about this and that, and like the woman you pick up in the first area, her husband died, and she tells a story about that, and then as soon as she's done telling a story about that, she goes into another story about something else. Just like Lee was saying, like the dialogue just never stops, and I don't get it, because that was not a problem in the previous two games. Every character had their thing to say, and then when they were done talking about it, and you were able to move on. But they just keep talking and talking and talking, and I like you said, Lee, you're expecting an achievement to pop up. But you don't know when it's going to pop up, because apparently everybody just keeps talking and talking and talking and never stops.
With enough gaps to make you walk away because you think they're finished.
Right.
And then they're off in the background because they've got not very good surround sound. So you look away from them slightly and you can't hear what they're saying all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So when you can hear, oh, they're talking again. I have to go back and listen to his story about something.
Yeah. About.
Yeah,
about something is about what it boils down to. That was definitely the biggest disappointment for me was that, because like I said, the story was such a big draw of those other games. To have it just kind of, it really is just bad. There's no like way around it. It's delivered poorly. It's written poorly. The English voice acting is atrocious.
And they keep talking over each other, but the balance of the surround is bad, so it's just a mess of voices at you at some point.
There's sound issues in the main game too when you're out there fighting. Like when those shrimp things are spitting acid at you, you can't even hear them. Did you notice that? Yeah. Like all of a sudden I'm just walking around and I get hit by something. I'm like, what the hell is hitting me? And I turn around and there's these weird creatures coming out of the water shooting stuff at me. And like there's no sound effect for it. Or if it is, it's so low and so muffled that there's no way you could have known that it was there. That being
said, it's a bad
form
for a game which is technically horror. You need to know when the monsters are going to creep up on you.
Right, because it's so punishing. Like, if you're playing on the higher difficulties, this game's no joke. It'll kick your ass. Which kind of is where I lead into, like, what I do like about this game, and that's when you're out there exploring the open spaces and just finding what's out there, because there's cool stuff out there to find, and the feeling you get when you get to a new safe house and you know you're safe in there, you know, navigating around enemy encounters because, you know, you don't have a ton of ammo. You scrounge like parts and chemicals in order to craft ammo, but you can only craft ammo at workbenches that are in the safe houses. So like if you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're low on ammo, you're going to have to figure out some way to, some other way to deal with the enemies. Like, you can craft ammo only for your little, air gun, your ball bearing shooting gun, which in the previous games was a really good weapon, and in this game it sucks. It's like, that was like one of my main weapons in the previous games. It would be like, it was super accurate. It was super powerful. It'd be able to rip through armor and stuff like that. And in this game, it if you're not getting headshots, you're have to pump a guy through like with 5-6 pellets before they go down. So that was a little disappointing. And you have to have it. It's a gun that's permanently in your inventory. You can't replace it with anything. But yeah, outside of that gun, the other weapons are pretty cool. Like, customizing your like AK-47 or your shotguns and stuff like that. Like, you get all sorts of scopes and extended magazines and stocks that improve accuracy and stuff like that. That's all pretty cool. You get like, I found some upgrades where like you can upgrade the watch thing on your wrist, and you get to choose. Like, you can't have everything at once. So I just picked up this thing that's supposed to detect enemy movement in my vicinity. So now I got to choose between having that on or the compass, which points me in the direction of my next objective. So like, if you get to a stealthy part of the game where you need a little bit more awareness, you can swap it out for the motion sensing thing. And then when you're out in the world and you need to get to your objective, you can swap it out for the compass. There's some cool stuff like that. And I think the shooting feels pretty good. It's a very slow game. Like, I've got the sensitivity turned all the way up and I still feel like it's a little slow, but I think that's deliberate. Yeah. Like Lee was saying, it does have survival horror elements to it. So they're trying to make you feel a little bit vulnerable. They don't want you to be this, like, you're not going to be the Doom Marine, basically. Running around, jumping from target to target. You're going to have to pick your battles. You're going to have to stand your ground, and you're going to have to hope that you have enough firepower to fend off whatever's coming at you. Which is usually either like a four-legged dog monster or a ghoul, because that's pretty much all I've seen so far.
Yeah, pretty much. The things with, like, the iguana eyes on the side of their heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, that first area was pretty cool. I enjoyed exploring that. And this new desert area seems bigger, but there seems to be less in it because it's mostly desert.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting to go around, though. It's because for all that, like, we say about, like, the character models and stuff like that, the one thing you can't put on is environment. Very intricately, interestingly detailed. It's very kind of, you can almost see like the story within some of the environments of how things have played out and gone wrong. And it's like, it's very well, it's nice to go around.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice to just, even though it's still creepy and tense, it's very tangible in its environments. Whereas, like, it may be that some of the characters don't look great. I don't think I've seen anything I've seen in the world that think that looks awful.
Yeah, no, really, the world,
I feel,
looks
like,
good.
That's where they put the most work in.
Even the monsters look good. The monsters look better than the human characters, that's for sure. And the lighting is really, really good in this game. Like, the way the game looks, like, when the sun is setting versus rising, and like during the day, like, night is really dark, and of course you have your flashlight and you also have night vision, but like, the flashlight has a really cool, like, it looks like you'd want a flashlight to look like in the dark, where you got your little spot of light in the middle of the screen, and everything else is, you know, like, it tapers off, so there could be something just right on the corner of that, and it could be right, getting ready to jump out and attack you, but you don't know. And, you know, it's super effective in, like, the dark tunnels in the previous games, and it's pretty good here too. It does lose a little bit because, you know, you're in these bigger open areas, So there's like there's the claustrophobia that that original games had, but there are like missions that take you into more, you know, claustrophobic areas, like that. Lee, you must have done the one with the where you had to get the rail car, and you had the big fish thing attacking you the whole time. What did you think of that? Did you think that was a good sequence or not? Like the whole thing, the whole sequence.
Well, the whole boat thing.
Yeah, where you take the boat into the terminal, and then there are the ghouls, and it's all dark and.
Okay, sometimes that sort of thing kind of. I don't know. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. It depends. There's something not quite jiving about the kind of connecting with it. It looks fine. It looks fine. It probably looked nice. I don't know. I didn't really find it played that well, to be honest with you. Did you?
That sequence or the whole game?
That sequence.
Okay. Like what part didn't play well? The whole thing?
I don't know. It just felt a little. Well, what are you getting at? What did you have?
No, I'm just asking.
What did you think about it?
I thought
it was okay. I don't know. That sort of thing. Those kind of. I don't know. I thought it was fine. Okay, I guess.
Because you know it was a big step away from what. You know, you'd been in this big open world, and then all of a sudden you're in kind of like a, you know, enclosed area. It's dark, like the previous game, so it's a little bit of a throwback to that.
Throwback?
Yeah, yeah. A little bit. Yeah, that's what I got from it. But
yeah, but
I think atmospheric wise, it was very good. Hmm. Like it was very dark. And you had to have you had to keep charging your light or your night vision, whatever you had at that point. And ammo was limited. The only problem I had with it was, you were attacking the ghoul creatures, you'd be able to see them like on a platform that you were going to be at later on, and you could shoot them. And you'd take them out and you'd be like, cool, now I don't have to worry about them. But they would constantly respawn. A new one would crawl through the window. Like you'd take it out and then like, you know, a few seconds later another one would crawl through the window to kind of like force you to deal with it in the way that the game intended you to. Which is kind of strange because you can clearly see them standing over there, like why wouldn't you take that shot if you could? It was just that was a weird thing when I started noticing that.
Like it's triggering sort of like a set piece, despite the fact it's not a set piece. It's still
like it was design. A set piece, but like they forgot to put the wall up that was like covered up your view of where you're going to be in the future.
And
I don't know. It was a strange thing because like I kept doing it. I shot the thing and then, you know, a few seconds later another one would crawl through the window, and it wasn't like they would keep coming. It would just be replacing that one that I just killed.
So for you to trigger later.
That was the only disappointing thing with that sequence. Otherwise, I thought it was pretty good. It was very tense. Like, because it was
good
so
as
dark.
A kind of a fan service thing, so you don't kind of stray too far completely away from the original style.
Yeah,
I guess it's very much kind of we'll add this in. Whether they'll keep doing that, I don't know, because that would get boring if you do two or three.
Oh yeah,
areas like that, and then they shove you down the alley because this is what people like from the original. Because I understand it's been pretty divisive from the people that like the corridors. They like going down the tunnels.
I would imagine because it like. It is a big departure, and yeah, I mean, like when you're out in that open world, there are some cool things that go on. Like I came across this building that I couldn't get into, and I had to solve this puzzle with powering up a generator and then flipping these switches in the right way in order to get to the room with all the cool shit in it. And I haven't encountered anything quite like that in the second area yet, but I'm hoping that the more I play, the more I find these kinds of like little bespoke puzzles out in the world that aren't like mission critical. Like the mission doesn't tell you to go here, but if you explore a little bit and you check them out,
it'll treat you.
You'll get a little bit of a puzzle or something like that to solve. Cause that's like, that's what I was envisioning when I was hearing about like the way that the game was going to be structured, is like, these smaller open areas that are, you know, crafted a little bit more, handcrafted a little bit more than just like a big gigantic open world where they just throw, caves and, you know, enemy bases and whatever, just all willy nilly throughout the area.
As a fan of the series, because you are a fan of the series, are you happy with the way they've so far? The way they've changed the direction to some extent.
I don't think
they could have
done
tunnels three times in a row.
No, they couldn't have done another one in the original format. But yes and no. Like I think they totally fucked up with the story and the characters and motivations, and like the little bit like the thread connecting all this stuff together just seems like it wouldn't take much to make an excuse to go out into the world, right? But they keep making all of these excuses as to why they never did it before. And like, all you really need to say is, well, because everybody thought it was a nuclear wasteland, right? Like that's all you need to say in order to get somebody to stop, like not take a train out into, you know, irradiated Russian wilderness, is like, yeah, actually it's a whole bunch of nuclear bombs sit there and you're going to die in 2 seconds if you go out there. Okay. But then they go off the rails in terms of like trying to figure out how to, you know, like there's always going to be some sort of like some sort of subplot, like some sort of secret motivations going on or something like that. And it's like, it just didn't come together that well.
I don't know if it's an oversimplification of the books, because they're based on novels, aren't they? Russian novels.
Yeah, but I don't know how much they've deviated from that at this point. I really don't know. I don't know. It feels like if I had to take a guess, I would say that the novels did not, like, Metro 2033 and Metro Last Light were heavily based on novels, and Metro Exodus is not, because of how terrible that story is. in comparison to what happened in the previous games. But on the other hand, I do like being out in the world and exploring it and having fun there. I still got to go back and check out this new desert area, and really get into that. It's not off the bat, it's not quite as interesting as the first area, but I'm hoping something happens later on that makes it a little bit more interesting to me.
Yeah.
So what is your, where are you standing currently, Lee?
I am standing at a lift, kind of boat lift thing.
Yeah.
That a woman sends up, but then glitches out and doesn't send back down, so you can't actually progress with the game.
Okay.
I'm waiting for a patch to get that one out. Apparently, it's you either get it or you don't.
Oh.
And I haven't. It's actually a problem I had, kind of, and you just have to restart everything with the second one. where I got completely stuck because something screwed me over that was just a one-off random thing. And I ended up just giving up on the game for about 6 months. Okay. So it's kind of a running theme with me with retro games, where I'll get completely screwed over by something that randomly happened in the game. So I think I'd run out of my valve just after I'd hit a checkpoint, and I was in a perpetual loop of suffocating, and I hadn't done a manual save.
Yeah.
So I literally had to start.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I forgot to talk about my save glitch. So early on in that, in Exodus, in the first area where I was exploring around, and all of a sudden I completely lost the ability to save because they're like a quick save. There isn't like a log of saves that you can do or anything like that. You can quick save, and then there's checkpoints that it does automatically. And all of a sudden, I just lost the ability to save, and the game stopped checkpointing. And before I knew it, like it says on the menu, how long it's been since your last save, it's like 45 minutes since the last checkpoint, 50 minutes since the last checkpoint. An hour and 5 minutes since the last checkpoint.
Oh,
and then I died. Oh no, that was it froze. It froze on that. It's frozen for me twice on the pause menu.
Ooh.
Like I just press pause and I go do something and I come back and it's frozen. And that's what happened. I paused it and it locked up and it froze and I had to close it out and I lost like an hour of progress. Come to find out, it was this one event that happens out in the world. There's like these, so in the first area, you come across this anti-technology cult that's like, their religion is all based around, you know, the technology is the devil, et cetera, et cetera. And you come across some of them out in the wild and they've set up this like ritual area, and an event happens, an event gets triggered, it's all scripted and stuff like that. And what I found out is every time I went to that, like, the game had checkpointed right before that event, and then naturally every time I reloaded I went right to that event first because I was like, well, I fucking died again, so now I gotta do all of my ritual again, where I go over to this, then I go over to the save spot, then I go over here, then I go over there. And it turned out it was something about that event that broke the save system, because if I avoided it completely, it was fine. Like, I completely avoided it, and I never had an issue with saves again. So there's some sort of bug going on with that particular event that breaks the save system, and I've seen posts about it on other locations, so other people are having it too. So PSA, avoid those people in the first area if you can.
You're playing the Xbox, right?
Yeah.
Or PC. Have you tried it on the X yet? Because it's optimized for the X, apparently. It's designed specifically around the X.
Yeah, it looks really good, and it plays really good.
Yeah, it's running well, yeah.
It doesn't run as well as I heard it runs. There are definitely frame rate dips and stuff like that more frequently than I thought they were going to be. But it looks really good, and generally speaking, it's a pretty solid version of that game, except for the glitches here and there, which seem to be plaguing all of the versions, not just the Xbox version.
Yeah. I don't know if they rolled out patches yet for it.
I haven't noticed anything. I've been checking to see. It, like you were saying before, it's a low budget game. I don't think it's a very big team, so I think things like that are going to take a while to roll out. They have been hot fixing on PC, but they don't have to go through certification there. That's what holds up a lot of things. Patches on Xbox and PlayStation is they have to be certified by Sony and Microsoft before they can be rolled out. So either way, it's going to be like at least a few days after PC gets patched, because PC, there's no red tape there.
Yeah,
I hope they put out some patches, because it could use some work, that's for sure.
Yeah. So I think what we're basically saying is the first couple of months of 2019 have been a bit of a dud for games. It's not quite been exactly what we thought any of the games we were waiting for at the beginning of the year were going to be.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
You wanted Metro for the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
Anthem,
I guess
you wanted Anthem for the Destiny type experience. It hasn't quite turned out that way.
Yeah. I would say though, because I was also playing God Eater that came out this month, and that's been a fantastic upgrade from God Eater 2. Like, God Eater 2 was just pure shit, and this one is great. Everything works. Everybody that's hated the last one has absolutely loved playing this one because the systems actually work. So
yeah.
I can throw that in there. So there's been a little gems in there that if you're fans of those type of games, they've been good.
I think Resident Evil 2 hit pretty well.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah. I won't talk about that because it'll be all night.
Yeah, no, we won't get into that, but I would say that that's a sequel that delivered.
Yeah. That's on the end of the year. That's already.
Yeah. Maybe we'll sneak Resident Evil 2 in on the next episode. If games are a little light. I'd like to talk about that, and I know Lee would also like to talk about that.
Actually, I played that one too, so we can all
have a chat. I guess that's going to wrap it up. What are we looking forward to in the short term? Anything on anybody's radar that they want to say that they're looking to pick up that are they looking forward to? Besides the Division, which I think we're all getting.
Right now, I don't think I have another Fate game coming out. Fate Stella Link.
Fate comes out game?
In March as well. Yeah, it's another just like hack and slash anime series.
Oh, Fate. I thought you said Fake.
Yeah.
So did I.
Fake.
I've got another Fake game coming out.
And then that's about it. And then I've been playing that new card game Keyforge. So
yeah, how's that?
It's a lot of fun. It's very unique. And I've only got to play a couple matches so far, but the amount of interest we have in it, like just at my job, is crazy. Everybody's been picking up decks, picking up like 2, 3, 4. I bought 10 of them because every single one's different. Because there's no trading of cards or anything. You buy a deck and it's completely custom to that deck, but you never know what you're going to get because it's an algorithm that creates these decks.
Okay, cool. Actually Thursday you can look forward to my review of Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove.
Sweet.
Yep.
Sorry. Big L.
Yeah, Big Earl's there. And the other guy, Toe Jam. Toe Jammy. Toe.
What gave it away, the title?
Yeah. Yes. And then.
Have you tried it yet, or?
Oh, yeah, I've been playing it. I've had review code for that came pretty early. I've been playing it all month.
Oh, splendid.
I know exactly.
Did you play the originals?
Yep. I know exactly what I think about that game, and I can't talk about it until Thursday.
Well, goddammit.
Yep. you can look forward to that. And as far as anything else is coming out short term, I can't really think of anything. When does Sekiro come out?
Next month.
Yeah. Oh, March 22nd. Okay, so that's later. I guess we're kind of...
Devil May Cry 5 as well.
Is that it later or is that earlier in the
that
month?
That is, I believe that's the same week. And March?
No, that's March 8th.
March 8th? Oh, man.
Yeah, that's coming out not this week, but next week. So
we'll see how that one goes with the new engine Capcom we got.
Yeah, we'll have to come back and talk about Devil May Cry 5. I was not impressed with that demo, but I don't know, maybe it's not an accurate representation of the game. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, there's four different characters with very different styles of combat as well. So,
I guess we'll see how it comes together. I think that's going to do it. Does anybody else have anything they want to add? Anything else they want to throw in there?
That's about it.
No? All right, Derek, you want to shout out your stuff?
Yeah, if anybody wants to stop by, I am on Twitch at Murder Monkeys Gaming almost every night after 8. Starting Wednesday, I'll be dropping down to 7 because my work schedule is changing. Hopefully we'll see you there, and then on my Tuesday nights when I take over for Voxel, probably do some Grandmaster runs tomorrow on Anthem.
Look forward to that. Tuesdays, Derek takes over on the Voxel channel, and Lee, you just kind of sit around in the group, right?
Thanks a bunch. I'll be around in the group.
What do you want to shout
whenever
out?
Whenever there's... keep an eye on the our Twitches. We often do. I only really do stuff for Voxel, so obviously we're doing some. We do something every night a week, don't we?
Yeah, we try to.
So keep an eye on there. Keep an eye on our groups.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, and yeah, if you haven't joined the Voxel Voice group, check us out: facebook.com/voxelvoice, youtube.com/voxelvoice. Twitter.com/VoxelVoice and Twitch.com/VoxelVoice. And we will see you next time.
Yep.
Cheers.
Later.